morning, everybody, and welcome to Living Astrology with Janet Hickox. It's time to grab your cup of coffee or your tea, sit back and relax so we can chat about what is happening up in the stars above for this weekend. It's Friday, and with me this morning are my favorite duo from the Pleiadian Earth Energy, Pia Orlean and Cullen Baird-Smith. Welcome to the both of you this morning.
Thank you, Janet.
Thank you, Janet. We're always happy to be here.
I know. I love it when you're here. We get to chat about so many different things. And our subject matter, for all of you who are just tuning in, behind the scenes was death and dying. Not a pretty context for the Friday, this beautiful day here in the Pacific Northwest. But one that I think is very important because it's not just the people that are dying, like transitioning off the planet. Pia, you started out this morning by saying you felt altered or you've been altered. And to me, that's a sort of death, right? Or a transition that, or a transformation perhaps, that is going on with a lot of people. You want to tell us a little more about what did you mean by that?
Well, it's absolutely not being fully focused on the third dimension. It's a experience of being somewhere else while I'm here. It's maybe akin to the dream state, but a waking dream, like realizing that we're living in an illusion. And when I'm somewhere else, anything can happen. I can just not be here and not be coherent because something else coming in, or sometimes I burst into wild gales of laughter because Colin and I joke and say it's the cosmic joke. I'm hearing the cosmic joke. Or sometimes different voices will come through and I hear different voices. But, you know, having been a trained clinical psychologist, I can tell you for sure this is not any kind of abnormality. This is an actual shift that all of us are capable of. And many of us are already beginning to experience the edges of it, although I've been doing it for years.
I think we're all capable of it. I completely agree. If we use the word death, I think we can think about the Buddhist meaning of little deaths, where we go through changes and we're really not the same person after a particular experience. We're actually dying out of something that either no longer works for us or is no longer appropriate. And I think what Pia is talking about when she says she's altered is, I think she's moved to a different space or a different, maybe it's vibratory, maybe it's frequency. We could call it many, many things, but it does happen. And Pia and I often are not really here. I mean,
you're off in the ether.
It's shocking to talk about this in public, but I would say a good 50% of the time, our bodies are here, but our consciousness or our soul or spirit is out there. And I'm talking about during the waking day, not at night. We can be just gone and we don't know where we are. Sometimes we come back and we have a little feeling of, oh, well, yeah, we were doing this or doing that. But it's certainly happening to us and we know it's happening to other people.
There's also the fact, and this is scientific fact, that I have actually died in this lifetime, been declared clinically dead 3 times. I mean, the first time happened in 1984 when I was in a car wreck and my neck was broken and I was declared brain dead for 7 minutes. And yet I came back. I was told I could never move my neck again. Obviously, I don't know the powers of my healing abilities within me. You know,
never question the healing abilities.
Yeah. And then the second time I died during a Venus conjunction, a Venus transition, exactly when it was on point. And that one, I stayed gone for many, many, many days. Colin had taken me to the hospital twice. There was nothing else they could do for me. And yet he wouldn't let me go because he knew I was going to come back. And I did. And that was in 2012. And then the third one was in 2013. So I know that death is just a swinging door. For some people, it's a finality. But I think that's because of their belief system. I think many people can just go through the experience and be in another dimension, be in another form, whatever it is, and then say, oh, wait a minute, I don't think I'm finished yet, and come back.
I wasn't done there.
Yeah. We also had an experience. We were told and absolutely encouraged to go to South America years and years and years ago. We were told that there was something we needed to do. So we went to the place we were supposed to do whatever it was that we were supposed to do. We both died in that energy in Peru.
Yeah.
And it was an altering, very unusual situation because we did it together. We experienced the same thing. And we were in La La Land for 3 or 4 days. I would say almost comatose, possibly comatose.
Not ourselves.
And this was not non-drug induced, right? There was
no drugs.
No.
Peyote or ayahuasca or anything.
Not out of the blue, actually, Janet. We contacted some energy that we were supposed to help dispel. And
it took it out of us. It changed. It altered who we were. It altered our reactions. We were engaged with other people during this time, except for one period of time where we were withdrawn in our own space, where we were actually literally gone. But that's, you know, death and dying is just a swinging door into other realities.
Very true. Very true. Lately, I've been having these experiences. So it's been going on probably, I don't know, 6 months or more, where suddenly during the day, I have this glimpse of something, a reality that's not this reality. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, was that a dream? Is that a parallel life I'm in? Am I remembering something? It's so weird because it's almost disorienting because you're like, oh, wait, come back here. You're here in this reality. So I'm never sure. Is that a dream I had that I'm suddenly remembering? Or is there, you know, something else, you know, going on in my sleep that then during my waking hours, I somewhat get glimpses of what it was that I was doing or happened?
Several things could be occurring, but what we call that is bleed through, where we're actually experiencing a parallel life consciously. I mean, we're here, we're awake, we're standing, we're sitting, we're not asleep, we're not in a meditative state, but we get those glimpses that you just described. And we know from our experience that that's bleed through from another, I don't know, realm, dimension. And P and I have been dealing with this since we were children, and it's altering. I love that word, altering. Thank you, Pia. It's altering, and it's a little strange at the same time.
Right, because you're like, whoa, wait, come back here. Like you snap back to this reality. And then I almost can't remember what it was that I was seeing. Mm-hmm. But I'll come back with like this happened to me yesterday afternoon. And the only thing that I can remember out of that experience was the word bus, like bus. I was on a bus. No, how could I have been on a bus? I'm sitting here in my living room. So, it can be very disconcerting to come back with just this little, you have this like feeling or picture of some place or something that you're doing. But then when you come back, it's gone or most of it's gone. It's weird. It's very weird.
Janet, today, which is, just the edges of moving into the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction.
Which I'd like you to talk about.
Absolutely. Today, after I woke up, I was awake for a very brief window of time, and then I had to go back to sleep again. I slept for 3 hours. I got up, I ate lunch, I went back to sleep, and I slept for another 3 hours. And then I spent an hour and a half trying to get back fully functional in the third dimension to be able to be on this show today because I was clearly experiencing something else. I know that I was in an altered place. I brought back some things about galactic wisdom moving forward, other voices telling me things that we have to do. I don't know if it was Larkma or somebody else of wisdom speaking, but I brought back certain phrases, and then I brought back 28th, the 28th, the 28th. You know,
the 28th
is three transcending energy, and it's following, it's following, will be at the end of Mercury retrograde, which will still be in the shadow of it. We'll be at the end of the collective shadow. That'll be over with. We will have gone through the full moon in Taurus. That'll be done. And then 4 days after that, I kept being told the 28th, 28th, 28th. No idea what three transcending is going to bring, but something I was being told.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know why I felt this way today and why what transpired. But the reason I'm sharing that with the audience is because I feel, and Cullen joins me in that, that in this time of transition, which we are all in, you absolutely have to listen to whatever the body needs. If you need to sleep, sleep. Doesn't matter if it's the middle of the day, because oftentimes we're awake in the middle of the night. If you need to eat, eat. If you're not hungry, don't eat. Everything is in shift.
Interesting. The 28th is a Sunday, of course, and it is the Mars conjunct Neptune day. And that's been a powerful sort of transit that we've been watching off and on, the Mars as he's moving through the square, as he moved through the sextile and so the trine, as this adds action to our spirit, right, to our rising spirituality on the planet. And as he's a catalyst, Mars comes in and he's like the boot that kicks things off. And when he comes into contact with Neptune, then it is a new cycle of maybe increased spirituality. And it can also feel like that tug of war within us, right? You're talking about the tug of war between what your body needs, but also then what your mind is telling you that you should do or should be, or, you know, that kind of thing. When likely you're getting some kind of attunement in your sleep, even if it's during the day, that energetically or spiritually takes you into the next time period. So interesting day. We'll have to watch what the 28th is.
They're all interesting right now. It's a very intense and interesting period.
Sometimes, are you finished with that thought?
Yeah.
Sometimes we get dates and we think it's the upcoming of the next week or the current month. And sometimes these dates are not directly ahead of us. Sometimes they're 6 months ahead, a year ahead. And we have watched this, and several astounding things have happened to us where we were sure that this meant sometime soon, and it didn't occur next week. It didn't occur next month. Sometimes it didn't occur next year. 5 years down the line, 7 years down the line, on a 28th, something big happened. So sometimes we don't even know what the specific timeline will be.
But we are going to be prepared for whatever may open.
That's so vague, right, Spirit? Can you just be a little more like detailed about what it is that you're trying to tell me? Because what good is it for me to, you know, every 28th that comes up now, are you going to be like looking at, and the 128th that you don't look at, that's when something will happen and you'll be like, oh, that's what it was about. If I was only prepared.
Yes.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, right? So obviously it'll be something, if it's really important, something that maybe Spirit will, you know, invite you to pay attention more to information as it comes upon you.
Yeah. Here's a really funny but serious experience of this. In 2008, I believe, Pia can correct me, I got a huge intuition that she and I needed to drop our lives, cancel our appointments, and go to Yellowstone. And Pia looked at me and said, look, I've got a ton of professional appointments. I can't just call all these people and say,
guess sorry, what? We're gone.
Yeah. I persuaded her to do that. We packed the car. We
rescheduled, spent an hour rescheduling people.
Both of us. We drove three states away. We got to Yellowstone. We were there for a week. Nothing happened. On the last day we were there, we got up at about 3 o'clock in the morning because we wanted to view a special area where certain animals are active at daybreak.
At sunrise.
And we were in a specific spot, and I had the most amazing lucid waking period vision that lasted 2 or 3 hours of the most incredible experience of seeing Yellowstone completely blow itself up. It was filled with orange, yellow, red fire. Animals were fleeing. I was reporting what I was seeing, sometimes open-eyed and sometimes closed-eyed, to Pia. And this went on for 2 or 3 hours. And
super volcano.
Exactly. What I got was, this was, I believe, in August, September, August.
It's August.
I got, during that experience, it was going to be the following January that Yellowstone was going to
blow.
Well,
you got that it was going to be January, and you assumed.
We assumed it was the
next January.
January of 2010.
We watch every January for what's happening in Yellowstone.
We have waited for 12 or 14 years for the super volcano to blow. And scientists have been saying for the past 5 or 6 years, it inevitably is going to happen sometime.
Yeah.
This experience was so vivid and so real. I was sure that this was going to happen. And guess what? Hasn't happened yet.
Mm. Yeah, but you know, it's always lurking there, right? As that they've discovered so much more about that super volcano, how much magma is actually under the park, and with still no idea of how or when, what's the trigger, when will it blow? Again, it's just that vague. Someday it's gonna go. Yep. And is that, you know, in our lifetimes, or is that in a geological age? We don't know.
Yep.
So that's so fascinating, though.
It is. So the reason I brought that up is the 28th, who knows what 28 it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. And is it that? Is it, you know, is it the super volcano? Oh, my goodness gracious. Well,
yep.
Right. The thing about it is there's nothing we can do about it. Unless there's specific guidance that comes that says, okay, you and Pia need to be at a certain place at a certain time, or you need to warn the West Coast to get, you know, inland, whatever that is, then you can act on it. But until then,
right,
we can't act on any of this.
Yep.
And that's the part that I think gets frustrating, right, mm-hmm. is that, you know, we get these partial glimpses into the future or into a possible future for whatever reason. I just want to say good morning to people who are popping in. There's quite a few people here. Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Linny. And MD says, happy Friday. Hello, Pia, Colin, and Janet. Much love and gratitude. Her name's Melanie. Hello, Melanie. Lex the Hex, good day, everyone. I love that. Jamon, good morning. TD Hawk, good morning from the Catskills. Much love. Never been to the Catskills. And good morning to Terry. Terry Hickox, my husband. Good morning, Christine. Good morning, J-Lo. She says, so true. She's had 4 NDEs, near-death experiences. One, the doctor took 45 minutes to bring me back.
Wow.
That's a long time. You should write a book about what your experiences were during that period of time. Lex the Heck says, like little downloads that you can almost feel being real. Yes, I get that. And a lot of people are saying, in fact, MD Melanie says, yes, Janet, that happens to me so often, that idea of like snapping back into a reality, but thinking that there was this other one going on. Terry Strauss, good morning to you. J-Lo, wow, I've been looking into a few things, and I know connecting it to the nakshatras, Vedic astrology, I would think. J-Lo says, yes, it happens years later for me. So she must have experiences where she sees a date or something happens. And MD says, her birthday is June 28th. hope it's something awesome that happens. J-Lo says, interesting, I had seen animals from the 2017 eclipse coming from a fire also. And hello, Chester's mom. It's good to have all of you with us this morning. Whether you've interacted with us or not, it's great to have you. Now, before we go on, we have quite a few things that are happening astrologically. So I do want to spend some time talking about that. But before I do that, you know, here we are today. I guess we're, what, 3 or 4 days away from the ending of the collective shadow period. Is that, am I right in that? It's on the 22nd or 23rd, I think it ends.
22nd is the last day. We're out of it on the 23rd.
We're out of it on the 23rd. So for those of you who are new to that idea or that concept, Pia, why don't you describe what we've been experiencing as a collective, the shadow period, and what do we do next or what happens next?
Well, the intensity of a collective shadow cycle is often thought of as, when you look into the meaning of it, is thought of as an opportunity for humanity to do something different, do it a different way. But what we experience, because we're not trained in what it's used for, what we actually experience is everything goes wrong. More shootings, more wars, more cars being stolen, more sickness, more relationships falling apart. More of the negative typically happens during a collective shadow cycle. More emotional reactivity across the board, more tiredness, more sickness. But the intention of the collective shadow cycle is, look, these things are happening because you're not in alignment with the energies and doing it right. So the collective shadow cycle is intended to be the opportunity to get it right. And it always ends on 10 and lightning, 10, which is manifesting, and enlightening, bringing in the light, being enlightened. So it gives us all these shadows to clear out through love and through our own emotional work. That's what we've been doing. And then on 10 enlightening, hopefully we can step into the next period with more of an idea of how to harmonize with each other, how to be present, how to do things differently. We go, after the collective shadow cycle ends, we have 3 days until we step into the next 13-day period, which will be planting energy, which is perfect because that leads us into, okay, we've gone through the shadows, we've given ourselves a reprieve to rest for a couple of days. What do we want to intend for our collective future? What seeds do we want to plant? So the planting always follows this in order for us to be able to do whatever the shadows have shown us needs to be corrected. That's where we are.
It's a period that gives us the opportunity to look more deeply into ourselves. It's a period where we can look at all the things that don't work, all the things that no longer serve us, and actually make changes. And the reason it's called the collective shadow period is it's for all of humanity to do this. It's a group effort.
We come together to change.
We have individual shadow cycles also. Each of us has an individual shadow cycle of about 7 to 10 days. Every 60 days we have that. A rare few of people beside me here being
I was going to say like Colin.
A rare few people have their personal shadow cycles during a collective shadow cycle, but most people don't. I'm doing a special right now because we're in the collective shadow cycle period of offering people the opportunity to look at what their personal shadow cycles are and see if they want to align with, what do I need to look at? What are my themes? What are my problem areas? How do I want to move through this? So it's something of interest, I think, because when Cullen and I first were trained in this by LARCMA, the Pleiadian group, we spent about a year or two retroactively looking back at when things happened during our personal shadow cycles, and boy, were they on the money.
It was startling how accurate this system is.
Yeah.
But I want to emphasize that there's no negativity around the idea of a collective or a personal shadow cycle.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity for growth. It's an opportunity to increase our consciousness. It's just, in the dualistic system of planet Earth, it has a high road and a low road, just like almost everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And
if
we take the opportunity to really work on ourselves, both personally and collectively, the bingo moments, the bonus moments can be tremendous. We can get beyond, move beyond so many things, personal trauma, bad habits that we really want to get rid of. I mean, it's endless what we can do by utilizing these energetic periods to really clean up our act.
Thank you, Cullen. That was really a great addition.
Yeah, yeah, that is really good. Is there a particular theme to each collective shadow period that we can tell? Or is it just a sort of free-for-all kind of shadow period?
Well, when I do a full chart for somebody, I incorporate their personal energetic makeup with their shadow themes, and I find out what the themes are. But without doing a full chart, there's a very vague general theme you can do. For instance, if you're having a collective shadow cycle during planting, which is coming up, you might want to look at, okay, what am I planting with the way I'm thinking? Am I implanting negative thoughts because I'm saying, why am I unworthy, or why do bad things happen to me, or, oh, gee, this always happens? Are we planting negative things? It can be a general thing like that. But when I do a full chart for somebody, I incorporate their energetic makeup with their personal shadows to find out what is it you really need to work on karmically and in this lifetime.
So during the collective shadow period, does that mean our own personal shadows are also triggered, or is this more of conditions around planet Earth?
Well, for Cullen, it means his personal shadows are triggered because he's in it. And I have to say, he finished his with stellar colors, no emotional reactions, not one for the entire period, which was great. But for most people, they are not in a collective shadow cycle. What they will experience is feeling the energy of the collective being extra dense. Oh my, it feels so dense. It feels like I'm walking through tar. I just feel like the density is so intense right now. That's what most people experience. Or they can move into, I'm so worried we're going to go into a third world war, or what's going to happen in this solar maximum? What's the sun going to do to us? It can put us into a state of worry, which doesn't help anything, or a state of fear where all the fears come to the surface, but they're not personal. They're picking up what's going on in the collective.
It's more universal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any of the big themes that are on the planet at this time could be the stimulus to somebody to feel fear or feel like the energy is dense, that type of thing.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
And the thing that Cullen was pointing about the collective shadow cycle and the personal shadow cycles, saying there's no negativity. I just said he just came through this shadow cycle with not one single emotional reaction. When you work with your shadow cycles and you recognize that you're prone to having habitual emotional patterns show up and you work with that, you really change as a person. You evolve because you're working with all your triggers. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah, that's really cool. It feels to me, now I almost didn't realize we were in the shadow period, right? Except I knew it in my mind, because I felt like there's been so many big things going on in the world that we have almost become numb to them, right? Mm-hmm. So the only thing that really got to me was the whole Iran sending drones and bombs or whatever they were sending, missiles over to Israel, because in my mind, that was like World War III starting. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I got freaked out about over this period of time. Of course, it's not over yet, but we're coming to the end of it, which is a good thing. So it's hard sometimes when there are, you know, these very big things going on, not to have those emotional reactions. So
it's tough. It's actually tough. Yeah. Our Pleiadian friends address this issue quite often when they speak, and they tell us and the public that when we're experiencing a situation that you just described, it's hard to accept or deal with these atrocious things that are happening. Their point of view is, when that happens, if we can keep our vibration or our frequency at the highest possible level during those experiences, what we broadcast out, what we give out, is more potent when the situation is tougher, when the situation is more drastic. And the reason they say this is it's easy on a good day to be happy, to be joyous, to be sending out love and light and thinking of rainbows and unicorns. But on the days that we're having bad hair days, it's more challenging to keep that energy up, to keep that feeling of it's really okay and we're going to get through this. And that's why they're trying to help humanity understand when it's the worst, do your best to be at the highest level you can be, because that not only helps you personally, directly, but that energy ripples out from us individually and connects and contacts every other energy. That means people, animals, other planetary societies, whatever we want to imagine that our energy is helping out. So when things are at their direst, if we can pull up the best possible energy and not be depressed, not be angry, not be sad, it's more potent than it would be otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very true. What was it, Michelle Obama, that said, if they go low, you go high. So if the energy takes us into that low frequency of death or destruction, then we have to walk the high road.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. That's right.
Exactly. Yep. So I alluded to the fact that we were going to talk about some astrology here. It is an astrology show. And today, this earlier this week was quiet. Like Monday through yesterday, we're kind of quiet. But then today we end up with the sun moving into Taurus. And that brings us a day that's very much about change, right? We're moving with the sun's ego, outer expression energy from the sign of new beginnings or boldness into Taurus's energy now of grounding and practical expression. And of course, there's the whole financial outlook and that type of thing, the banking economy, et cetera, that comes in through Taurus. So we're moving our energy. Now, slowly, everything begins to shift over to Taurus. And it's not like Taurus has been empty because Jupiter and Uranus have been there. And they're coming into a conjunction tomorrow. But they've been very close to one another since last fall, and maybe even in the summer, they might have, kind of come close. They've not actually made the exact conjunction. They will do that tomorrow, Saturday. Yes, tomorrow. And that, gives me, I was thinking about this the other morning as I woke up. I thought, now what does that Jupiter-Uranus conjunction mean to me? Now, we've talked about that on this show, about the big changes in society, culture, revolutionary energy, the energy of innovation and newness that Uranus brings, and then freedom and that, and Jupiter amplifying all of that, and Jupiter's connection to society and culture and progressiveness. And those, our collective energies. But what does it mean to me? That's the question I woke up with the other morning. And so I thought about that. And I realized that this is a seeding time for every one of you, for every one of us, in that there's a part to play for each one of us in society. You're playing it all the time, right? In the work that you do, in the way you raise your family, in the way you spend your money, in your values, in the things that are of interest to you, you're always impacting society. There's just no way around it. We're part of the community that is called society or culture. And you could say the culture has been in the culture of the planet, but also of each, nation or each country. There's been a cultural war, if you will, going on between the forces of the old, the traditional, the set in stone group, and the need for change, because we know that change is the only thing that ever sticks around on the planet. So the force of change has been very powerful in transforming our beliefs, in transforming what's possible, getting us unrutted, if you will, from that past, unchained from that past. Some people might perceive this as being untethered, right? Where's the ground, right? Where's the ground beneath our feet? Well, now, as we shift into Taurus energy, we're finding the ground. It might be new ground, though. It might be ground that's untried and untrue. We don't know yet what that new ground will be. So everyone who has, you know, their astrology chart, let's take a look and see, like, what house is Taurus in your chart? The houses tell us the where. So the where in your life, are you a part of a change that's going on in society, right? So it's really interesting to look at that. And no way is there one word answers. There's just no way, right? I can't distill it down to some, you know, little words. But in my own chart, I thought, okay, mine is happening in the 11th house, which is the house of community or friends, associations, networks, dreams and goals, humanitarianism, that type of thing. And one of the big things that I've been really thinking about and working on is, how am I connected to the networks, right? How is my voice getting out? Who is my voice getting out to? And how do I impact that in a way that I haven't been doing in the past? And I thought, well, that's right there, because that's the part and the role that I play in society. That's my cultural role. That's my life purpose. You could call it that. So every one of you, whatever house that's playing in, is the role or is the potential for the part you're playing in this change of society and culture. That's to bring it down to the personal. Collectively, you know, collectively, we can't really impact that except to play our own part. Right. Mm-hmm. I can't make you two do anything different. Right. I have to leave that to you. But indeed, you have a role to play based on wherever those things are happening in your chart. And Pia, weren't those things happening in your eighth house? Isn't that where Taurus is in your chart?
I don't think I have any Taurus in my chart at all.
Yep. Everybody does.
I don't know. I know that Cullen's north node is in Taurus in the 11th house. I know that about him. But I, in looking at my chart, when you said that the other day, I looked for Taurus and I went, I don't know where it is. So I can't. I know that in my eighth house, I have Aquarius in my eighth house with my
Okay.
But not Taurus.
So across from Aquarius is Leo. So you're going to have, let's see, so you're going to be, so it's probably Taurus is probably in your 10th house or maybe your 11th house as well.
Okay. I would guess 10th maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, my whole point in bringing this up is that this is personalized for you, even if you have no planets in Taurus, Pia, because you've got planets transiting that sign. And it's bringing the matters of that house, whichever one it is, to the surface and kind of establishing the part that you'll play in this establishment of a new progressive, let's say, society or the cultural changes that are taking place on the planet, right? Mm-hmm. Our mindsets are shifting. Everything is shifting at this point in time. And whether if you have planets in that, like if you have calling your north node in Taurus, then your destiny is being impacted as well by the matters of the house that it happens to be in. If it's the 11th house, you, like me, are looking at, well, how are these networks coming together? How is my work or my voice getting out there? Who am I working with in terms of networks, people, communities? Am I serving in my highest with my gifts and my talents? What's my big dream? You know, what's my goal? Those are the things that the 11th house will focus on. A couple of people are saying here, Irene, good morning, Irene. She has hers in the 9th house. So the 9th house is an interesting place because it is the house of growth and expansion. It is where we take a broader view of the world and our place in it, where we have to address perhaps the beliefs or opinions that we hold and how we can transmute those things. How are we needing to change to move ahead with the culture? Or in some cases, Irene, this may be you find yourself already ahead of the culture that you live in or the society you live in. And how do you help bring others up to speed, right? That might be that part. Let's see. 12th house, J-Lo. 12th house is all about the subconscious patterns that are running the show. So there's a lot of ability to be a good counselor or coach or, dare I say, therapist to the people around you, that maybe you're holding some key insights that, you know, come from you to others, that you can participate, you know, in, that helps raise the vibration. Let's see who else was talking. I saw another house. What was it? First house, Taurus rising in South Node. You are, Christine, taking this through a personal association with society and culture, right? This is you personal. The first house is the house of you. What you look like, how people perceive you. Not that you do anything to make them perceive you that way. It's just an aura about you. So you have a very grounded, Taurian, practical aura about you. That's how people perceive you. So how can you use that practical voice, perhaps, or your practical actions, that groundedness to help society move forward? How could you do that? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that just gives you guys some, you know, insight into your own role here, while the bigger picture is changing, irregardless of what you're doing. there's nothing that we can do to really change anything that's happening in that bigger, wider world, except to work with ourselves. Right? I can handle me. And that's about all I can really handle. But everybody has a role, even if they didn't know exactly what it was. So, and it doesn't end tomorrow, right? It's not like it happens tomorrow. These are things that likely we've been working on over the last several months, as there have been, you know, these two planets in Taurus for a long time. For at least the last year, they were in there together. And this is kind of, there's this culmination point coming, because Jupiter is finishing his transit through Taurus next month and entering into Gemini. So anytime a planet that's spent a great deal of time in a sign, and Jupiter's been there for, like I said, almost a year, then we're reaching a culmination point of what that planet was teaching us or bringing to us during this period of time, and then taking that and integrating it and then moving it into the next sign, which will be Gemini. So it'll be an interesting thing to see, like a conjunction between Jupiter and Uranus, bringing us revolution, amplifying the revolution, whatever that revolution is, and taking it then into the next sign, which is the sign of duality. So then I think, oh, there's going to be this split on the planet for a while between the people who've embraced the progressiveness that the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction brings versus the people that are still dug in, holding on to the old, trying to drag us all backward in time, taking things away, our freedoms, etc. So it's fascinating to watch play out.
It is.
Even though it's irritating as all snot sometimes, right? That
So this conjunction tomorrow hasn't happened, if I have my facts right, for 14 years. Is that correct?
Well, it's longer than that, Colin, because this particular conjunction is in Taurus, and there hasn't been a Taurus conjunction of Uranus and Jupiter since, I think, 1941.
Oh.
What was that year?
Oh.
Right. Think of some of the big revolutionary things that happened. Not all of them good either, right? The bomb, yeah. All of those things, the war, World War II, the bombing of Pearl Harbor here in the U.S., and other things that were going on around the world that were signifying a revolution. That was the last time it was in Taurus. But it's true that every 13 years, approximately, 13 to 14 years, they make a conjunction.
Right.
But they haven't been in this sign for a while.
Okay, so thank you. That clarifies that for me enormously. But if we look back 13 or 14 years, I wonder specifically what may have occurred that we can actually look at and say, yes, those influences did happen retroactively back when we look at that period of time. And I haven't done that specifically, but I will bet that some significant things showed up.
Let's do this. So the last Jupiter Uranus conjunction, when was that? Because it was in 2011, and they met at whatever sign they were in, they met. Okay, hold on, I got to go to another site. I hate that. Just give me the information I want. Jupiter Uranus conjunction, that's upcoming. That's Taurus. That's this one.
2011 was the year of the Fukushima
event. Right, the earthquake, the big earthquake.
That was 2011. And we just had a 7 or 6.9 earthquake in Japan 2 days ago.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to look back and see. I want to say it was in Aries. Right. That, I lost you guys. Where am I? There we are. So I think it was in Aries. It might've even been at the end of Pisces. But I'll have to go deeper. I don't want to spend the time looking that up now, but, that was a big deal. And that, you know, made us take a look at everything nuclear, right? Mm-hmm. Is it wise to have nuclear facilities in areas where there are such big earthquakes or the potential for them? What was the impact of the oceans being involved with dumping of tons of radioactive material into the ocean?
Only in the last couple of months, Japan has made public the fact that they are increasing the amount of nuclear waste they are putting into the ocean to clear out any remaining radioactivity. So there's a definite link there.
Definitely. And I would say there's probably a link there to our climate, right? Mm-hmm. Because the oceans are essential in the climate on the planet and the currents and how the water is brought up to the surface. And it's like we're trying to kill the planet, you know, somehow. So anyway, these are all things, though. These are big, you know, big topics that, you know, we are a part of the conversation, if you will. Right, that we are all a part of. And then it's interesting because then on Sunday, you know, we're still holding true to that conjunction, but on Sunday the sun comes into a square with Pluto. And you know, the sun and Pluto together bring a lot of energy to ideas around power and power struggles. And we end up with this potential for transformation to occur, but because there are obstacles or challenges, things that are in the way of our being able to get to where we want to go. And in that case, then sometimes we get to explosions, right? We get to unexpected things that shake us up to our very core. And the power struggles here, because the sun will be in Taurus at that time, is going to be about the land, right? About land, about stability and security, material possessions, the banking system, perhaps, or the economy in general, you know, the world economy. And there could be conflicts related to control issues, big time on the planet, through politics, through institutions, through all of the big things that Pluto can impact, the power structures, basically, the power grid, right? The power grid is very susceptible. And then what we encounter here is the sun in Taurus encounters resistance. It's an earth sign. It stays the course. It's stable. Or it wants stability. And so it's a fixed sign, we call it in astrology. Fixed means it's stable, right? It doesn't easily change, and it doesn't easily jump forward into a new direction. So there could be a clash between the desire for stability and the need for progressive change, right? I think we even see that in the dynamics, at least here in this country. I would have to leave it to you for your country, the dynamics between factions in the government that mm-hmm. are for progressiveness moving forward and mm-hmm. the other faction that is trying to take us back into mm-hmm. An old days sort of thing. So we have to embrace new ways of doing things. We have to. You don't have to agree that this is the exact way we're going to embrace change, but we have to embrace that things that of the past are dead. They're not working anymore. So what do we do? Where are we going to go? There's intense emotions that get brought up about this, no matter how you slice it. Pluto tends to bring up the darkness, right? To shine a light into the darkness. It's not to hurt us or to create, you know, a path of destruction, but that can happen. If especially, it's like the shadow period, like you're talking about, right? If we deal with the shadows when they come up, then we move with ease and grace through them. Pluto takes no prisoners, and he will bring up the dirt, the ugly underside, the thing, the taboos, the stuff nobody wants to look at, nobody wants to hear. La, 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 la. No, I don't want to hear that. But we have to, right? So we get to do that. Compulsive behaviors, the things that we keep doing over and over again without even asking the question, why am I doing this? Why does this keep happening? And then transformation and renewal possible after that point. Mm-hmm. Again, being willing, though, to do this. So Pluto's in Aquarius now, so it's highlighting power, power of the people. It's highlighting control. It's highlighting revolution, innovation, technology, having us confront the high sides and the low sides of anything new that comes along. You have to understand, too, that Aquarius itself is a fixed sign. It's like Taurus. It's fixed. It doesn't necessarily want change just for the sake of change, but it wants change that's progressive, that makes sense in the context of what the world needs. Mm-hmm. So you could just feel that struggle, because we're 7 billion some people on a planet that all have different ideas of what it means to be progressive, what technology means to us, right? There's some people that are like, no, I don't want technology. Then there are others like, give me more. But how do we deal with that as a society? These are the big questions. So the astrology right now is very powerful. It's as above, so below, right? If the planets are all in a huff, then we on the planet are all in a huff, right? So big, big things. So, okay, yeah. So somebody, J-Lo, thank you, my friend. Cafe Astrology says that January 4th, 2011 at 7:53 a.m., Jupiter at 27 degrees Pisces and Uranus at 27 degrees Pisces. Mm-hmm. And that conjunction in Pisces won't happen again until 2037. So you can see sometimes there's this, even though they conjunct every 14 years or so-ish, there is a long period of time before they actually go back to conjunction in the same sign.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and that's interesting too, because Pisces rules water. Neptune, the planet that rules Pisces, rules earthquakes. And just a couple of months later, March 11th, wasn't it, of mm-hmm. that year, was the big earthquake leading to the tsunami, leading to the Fukushima nuclear disaster. Christine Buckingham says AI comes to mind. By the way, thank you, J-Lo, for getting that info for me. Tom says the West Coast along the South End and up the East Coast of the state is the edge of the craton. Craton is a word that you hear. There's a YouTube channel where this gentleman is so amazing in how he talks about earthquakes, right? The geological people don't like him because he knows how to predict earthquakes as the energy moves along the craton, the different cratons of that make up the tectonic plates of the planet. And it's amazing the work he does. And I can't think of his name, Tom. Tell me who that is that I'm talking about, because I'm pretty sure you know.
Maybe.
I think it's Dutch Sense is the name.
Dutch Sense. That's him. Love him. Do you guys listen to his YouTubes?
Mm-hmm. We haven't in a while, but yes, we did.
We did regularly.
Regularly for a long time.
Yeah, I did too. And I was always amazed at how he moved through this energy, showing, you know, where these things were happening, what the impact is of when they're digging for oil.
Fracking.
Thank you. So yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah. And he is so thorough. One of the reasons we liked him is his research is so absolutely thorough that it would be hard for any scientist to say, you don't know what you're talking about, even though they do say that to him.
They say that to him all the time. But science was sure that our society was only 6,000 years old. And then there's Göbekli Tepe that is 12,000 years. So now they're having to rethink all of that. When was civilization? And I cracked up this morning. I was reading an article about this, and they tried to say that it was hunter-gatherers that built Göbekli Tepe.
No.
I'm sorry. No way. No way did hunter-gatherers build with such precision the city that we now are uncovering as Göbekli Tepe.
No, you're getting into my territory here. Hunter-gatherers had no technology other than walking around and stumbling onto food that they could eat. That was it.
Right? So I just about choked when I read that. I thought, okay, so science is going to kick and scream going into this idea that civilization is much older than what we've given it credit for.
Oh my God.
But it was hunter-gatherers that built it. Uh-huh, sure.
That's a pretty good one. When I was a student 50-odd years ago, most of the stuff I was taught in either anthropology or archaeology has been refuted time after time after time by this timeline. And P and I have experienced places around the world. We were in a very sacred, special place in the Ukraine that has been dated to 27,000 years. And there are places all over the world that, I mean, there are theories in Australia that we go back way, way, way beyond the idea that life started in Africa. So
yeah.
Anything is possible.
Yeah. It just recently somewhere, I think it was in Michigan or Minnesota, where they dug up bones of giants.
There's a whole cadre of people who are researching the phenomenon of giants worldwide. And there's a tremendous amount of absolute, accurate, factual proof that there was a race of giants. They have found skulls, bones, structures
our mythology. And myths are really just kind of a revisiting of something that was really happening at the time, the story of what was happening at the time.
And they dug up recently in the United States is matched in Europe, because they just dug up a cadre of bones from giants, skulls and the like. I think it was Italy, but I'm not sure. That just happened in the last month also.
Yeah.
See? Yeah. And then it takes forever for those kinds of things to make it into the common knowledge, right? Or into the history books, or into, you know, the things that we teach people about the truth in terms of where we've been and our history as humans on the planet. It's pretty amazing how resistant science is for all of its, let's think forward.
Well, it is. Science often doesn't want to be told that the things they've held as factual truth is not factual, because it shakes the very foundation of the scientific principles. I mean, they want to hold on to what they believe. And let me underline, believe is accurate history. We're finding things all over the earth that are proving that what we thought was real is absolutely not real.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting too, there's a few people out here talking about the 4.8 earthquake that was felt in New Jersey. T.D. Hawk said that he or she, I'm not sure, she, it looks like, lives along the Delaware, and it really shook her place in the Catskills. So difference of the rock formations on the East Coast from the West Coast and mm-hmm. how the earthquakes can spread, but they were there in, you know, strange places, right? So unfortunately, we are at the end of our hour. Pia, I wanted to give you an opportunity. You said something about you've been doing readings for people on their personal shadow cycles. Is that true? Is that what you yes. were saying? Is there a link where people can go to get some more information if they want to have that kind of a reading with you?
They can. It's Pia Orlean, PIAORLEANE.com, and then look under services and look at Pleiadian Earth Energy Charts. And for anybody listening to the show or their friends or anybody, I'm offering a discount right now. Full chart is $222 and the shadow cycle is $99. And if you book one of those and it's at a higher price, I will refund the difference to you, or you can simply email me and say, I want to do this at the reduced price. Yeah. My email is on the contact page.
I am now going to put that in. I can't put all of that. I did put the information, but I want to show it on YouTube. So did I spell that right? PiaOrlean.com. Okay.
Yep.
And do you happen to have your cards handy?
I do. They're over here.
Oh, cool. Draw us a card for the weekend. J-Lo said it was weird. Her cats freaked out because of the earthquake. I think all of the animals on the East Coast must have thought, what in the you know what is going on here?
It's the number 9, relationship harmony. Harmonize opposite and dualistic viewpoints for a more balanced life.
That's exactly what we've been talking about today.
And if Love you look it. In the book, it says, there's always an opposing viewpoint that is different than the perspective you may hold in duality. Larkma tells us we need to learn to recognize that there can be two rights, combining them together rather than insisting that you are right and someone else is wrong creates harmony rather than conflict. Additional viewpoints always broaden our perspective and bring more unity and connection. This creates more harmonious and whole relationship. Move beyond any limited perspectives of duality that cause separation, fear, or judgment. Just because you do not agree with someone does not make them wrong. Different does not mean wrong. Accept the other person as they are and make a choice either to be in their energy or to move yourself away from discord and into a more harmonious situation.
That is so cool. I love it when cards kind of mirror what we've just been talking about. So.
Me too.
Ah. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. Pia and Colin, thank you so much for being my guests on the show this morning. It's always nice to have you here. Everybody have a great weekend. See you on Monday. Bye.
Bye-bye for now.
Do you wish you could better understand yourself and what is going on in the world? Well, grab your cup of coffee or tea and join the podcast Living Astrology with Janet Hickox for Astrology, Human Design, and Jean Key's Wisdom. Mondays and Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Podcasts are available on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and your other favorite outlets.